This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pakistan, a third of the country, we're told, is flooded. Up to 33 million people are without food, sustenance, their homes, the ability to grow food. You only have to see a little of the video to understand the scale of this flooding, and that water is guaranteed to bring malaria, other diseases throughout the country. These are people with minimal means to start with. And now, Ms. Hussaina Khani, former ambassador from Pakistan, is with me. He's now at the Hudson Institute, and Bill Raju of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Mr. Ambassador, there is no way to describe this other than as unprecedented. It's an inadequate word. There is aid flowing now, but it seems very inadequate. How is the government bearing up under these conditions? No government would be successful in this moment in time, but what is your measure of Islamabad?
The scale of floods is much greater than past floods. Pakistan has had a long history of such floods every few years. It has never been able to build the infrastructure that is needed to try and manage it better. One third of the population has been affected this time, which is far more than the number that was affected in the last big flood in 2010. At that time, the United States and the Western countries considered Pakistan an important ally in the war in Afghanistan. So the aid came in much larger quantities than it is coming in right now. Right now, it is a triple. Then there will be the whole question of reconstruction. First, there is immediate rehabilitation of the people who have been affected by the floods, saving lives, providing food, providing medical assistance to people as the waters recede. But there will also be the need to rebuild homes, to rebuild the bridges that have been washed away, to rebuild the infrastructure, and no significant commitments have come so far. China, which is a country that Pakistanis have grown to think is their greatest partner and ally in the world, has not risen to the occasion even to say, okay, we will give Pakistan some debt forgiveness to try and give a space to the government, economic space. There is some talk of debt forgiveness by the UN Secretary General, but he doesn't control the finances. And there are many countries which are so upset with Pakistan's past political behavior that they are providing low-level humanitarian assistance, but not the kind of large amounts that might be needed, both for rehabilitation as well as for reconstruction. And then on top of it is the former Prime Minister Imran Khan, who hasn't stopped his politicking. Anywhere else, a person would take a breather and say, well, this is the time for giving relief to the poor who have been affected by the floods, whose homes have been washed away, who are stranded, who are living in makeshift accommodation. Let's try and provide for them. No, he isn't doing that because he represents the extremist strain in Pakistani politics. And of course, extremists see all tragedies as opportunities. They don't see them as an occasion to pause. So all of that puts a lot of pressure on the government. And while I am not going to say that the government is doing very well under the circumstances, I would say that it is holding up, and that does go to their credit.
And Imran Khan right now is calling for, continues to call for early elections. Is that credible, Mr. Ambassador?
Of course it's not. But then let's be honest. Imran Khan is like a lot of populist politicians. We've seen some in this country who just say things basically to get a roaring applause from their base. They don't say them because they mean them. They don't say them because they think that they are rational. And they don't always intend to follow up on them. They just get applause from their base. He has a strong base, but that's about it. In fact, if anything, I think if elections are held now, he will actually suffer from the retaliation by those who will feel that they are being forced to vote at a time when they should actually be in rehabilitation centers being catered for in terms of food, clothing, shelter, and medicine.
Bill, you have a photograph at Long War Journal that shows leadership, Al-Qaeda leadership in Iran. Is this correct? And what is the date on that photograph?
Yeah, John. So this photograph was put out there on Twitter about around August 26th. It shows the Al-Qaeda leader, Saif al-Adel, Abu Muhammad al-Masri, and Abu Khair al-Masri. So Saif al-Adel is thought to be the successor to Ayman al-Zawahiri. He's a wanted Al-Qaeda leader for the attacks in Kenya, Tanzania. Abu Muhammad al-Masri was killed in Tehran in 2020. He was assassinated there. And Abu Khair al-Masri was a top Al-Qaeda leader who was killed in a U.S. drone strike in Syria. It's well known that Al-Qaeda leaders shelter, a top Al-Qaeda leader shelter inside of Tehran. This photo is thought to have been taken sometime on or before 2015. The U.S. Treasury Department and U.S. State Department have noted that top Al-Qaeda leaders are operating inside of Iran. From the last four administrations have been documenting this. The most damning evidence has been released under the Obama administration. It's not just a picture of them. They're comfortable. They're well-dressed. They're smiling in this photo. What a lot of U.S. commentators on this subject of Al-Qaeda in Iran will tell you is that, well, yeah, they may be there, but they're under house arrest, or they're being restrained by the Iran's intelligence service. This photo shows the exact opposite of them. They're not being flanked by security guards. They're at ease again. They're haircut, well dressed.
Right.
What you're looking at here is Al-Qaeda, the members of Al-Qaeda's Central Council standing and at the center of Tehran in or around 2015.
Bill Garagio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Hussein Haqqani at Hudson, former ambassador from Pakistan. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.